Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Powerhouse Perspective, empowering leaders for business breakthroughs. If you joined us in the past, you know that I'm Scott Medeiros, president of HelmWise, and this is Chandler Rose, the CEO of the Rosewood Family of Companies. And we tend to discuss various topics on the podcast. In the past, we've talked about the captain, the importance of the leader of the organization. We talked about the ship, the business. We talked about the crew, the employees that are part of an organization, and the things you do to put all those pieces together to journey your ship to a worthy why. Today, we're going to have a little bit of a free-flowing discussion. I've got a couple of topics that we want to discuss today, but it's really going to be around how do you, as an individual, continue to grow personally and professionally. For myself, I tend to get away twice a year to go to the International Maxwell Conference that is held in Orlando twice every year. And that is an opportunity for me to grow both personally and professionally. I know that, Chandler, you belong to C12, and so you've got a group of individuals that you're learning from and continue to enhance. But one of the things that we talk a lot about within Maxwell is, and this is John Maxwell, in case you're not familiar with that term, John C. Maxwell, one of the best known leadership experts in the world. But we always talk about personal growth and the need that growth has to be intentional. In fact, John wrote a book called the 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. And in that book, the very first law is the law of intentionality, which basically says that growth doesn't just happen. It must be something that you do as an individual deliberately. So Chandler, what do you do deliberately in order to continue to grow? We've talked just this morning about a podcast that you read or a book that you've come across. What do you use sort of routinely as something to continue to grow both personally and professionally?
Yeah, the easiest analogy for me is if you follow kind of where fitness is going, especially with the YouTube world and TikTok and so, kind of the idea that you don't get stuck in one type of workout for an extended amount of time. Otherwise, you kind of plateau, as you call it. And I tend to have the same issue when I'm trying to expand my thinking or what I'm learning. And so I will bounce between podcasts, video, documentaries, even reading books, conversation, but certainly always seeking out ways to find people who think and see things different than I do. I jokingly say I like weird people, and that's very accurate. I kind of get tired very quickly. I'm not a person who wants everyone around me to think and like and enjoy and see things the way I do. That actually is pretty boring. So I think maybe before you even get to the mediums or the way that you push your intentional growth, I think a mindset change of it needs to move around, and that you are going to not find people that make you comfortable. That's a very good way to make sure you don't grow, is to constantly find people who are thinking like you, view the world the way you view it, have the same belief system that you do, and I just don't see you expanding your mind. So even before you get intentional of it doesn't just happen, you've got to be willing to commit to being uncomfortable and get different opinions.
Yeah, because one would say, unless you're being uncomfortable, you're not growing, right? If you're comfortable in the status quo, then
it is by just nature, as accurate as a, just like a diet, just like a workout. If you're going to stay comfortable, the odds of you having any success are very low, in my experience.
But it also sounds as if you got a lot of different things happening at the same time, right? It isn't as if you found a particular area of interest or curiosity and you're going to dig deep in there and you're going to look across different mediums, podcasts, books, lectures, those sort of things. You've got a lot of different things all happening simultaneously, but it sounds like. I've met quite a few individuals who are already reading multiple books. I'm a person who reads a book cover to cover, then I start my next one. So I'm very serial in my learning. And I have others who have four or five books going all the time. And I just don't, for me personally, being, I guess, as an engineer, I like the structure. But for you, it seems like you have a much more collaborative or more mosaic sort of approach to learning.
Yeah, I think it's all learning style. But I do try to identify, as I've gotten older and better, I guess, at learning.
Okay.
I do identify pretty quickly when I'm getting bored or when I'm not able to focus anymore. And so I try to pivot instead of pound through it, because if I'm truly trying to learn it, that's where it is, much different than a workout. Just pounding through it, I've found to be not a very good way to retain it and actually apply it. So if I'm on a subject and I just say, I can't do any more in this depth here. I'll right. switch over to something else that's a little more interesting, right. but still moving forward. And so it's not so much a random mosaic as I've tried to build in a conscious focus on whether or not I'm able to stay excited about what I'm learning.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit, about quitting versus grit, a little bit later on in our discussion. But one of the other areas that we talk about in personal growth is the law of awareness. Again, back to the 15 laws of growth. And in that is, you've got to know yourself to grow yourself. So how do you personally figure out where your weaknesses are? Or you're a person who focuses more on your strengths and tries to reinforce those rather than fill in gaps?
Much more of a maximize your strengths fan. Okay. Okay. No doubt about that. I think you mitigate. You have better understanding, I think, of the stats on how many people actually self-reflect.
Mm-hmm.
I think we may have discussed it here, but certainly I know you and I have discussed it in the past outside of the podcast. You know, I think a lot of people confuse their intentions with actually what they're doing and how they're perceived by other people. So their self-reflection is not always a unwillingness to self-reflect. They reflect on, well, I was attempting to do this, or this was my intent.
Correct.
Instead of what was the outcome and how did others perceive it. And so kind of a complicated answer. You could certainly spend a whole podcast on that discussion. But self-awareness is, you know, I've had it 2 years running as the highest risk for leadership that I'm
yes.
around is self-reflection, self-awareness. I would say is of people who are already driven, who have a level of success, even I'd say middle management and up. Certainly it impacts an employee as they're starting, but if you really want to see them stagnate or get stuck in a rut or see the business environment change and those individuals not change with it, self-awareness is probably the biggest. So, you know, not to contradict Maxwell,
mm-hmm.
I probably would move that to one
mm-hmm.
as opposed to intentional, because what are you intentional about if you have not already
done
evaluated whether you're self-aware?
Yeah, and that self-awareness, as you're right, that statistic says that if you were to go out and ask, especially executives, how many people think that they're self-aware, it's like in the 90%, like 91, 92%. And then in reality, when they've actually done the study in self-awareness, it's like 10 to 15% are actually truly self-aware. So there is this perception issue, which happens a lot, I would think, in business as well. I know it has happened to me many times over my career is, you know, you don't know what you don't know. Right. So if your frame of reference is only the things that you have learned, the people that you're interacting with, as you mentioned earlier, you don't see the things that are in your blind spot. And so part of the self-awareness is this constantly challenging to say, what is it that I don't know? Well, who are the people that I need to seek out? Or where do I need to be uncomfortable, to your point? And many people get that from, you know, mentorship, or they'll find people who've walked the road before them. It was a book I read not too long ago. It was a Chinese proverb. It says, if you want to know about the road ahead, ask those who are coming back,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting when you think about that. But I know for myself, I tend to be very focused on my world and my learning, and I'm not one who utilizes mentors very well. But when you started the Rosewood Family of Companies with ProVantage back in 2008, I'm sure there was a lot of things you didn't know, especially being a lawyer going into retail service operations. So how did you kind of bridge that gap of figuring out the things that you didn't know?
From a young age, I was looking for mentors and people who had found success in various areas.
Okay.
And so if you're not constantly, as we talked about Law of the Harvest on podcast and previously, if you're not seeking out, again, people who have success, but not just success itself, but can articulate how they got there and what maybe the mistakes they made and decisions they made, build that rapport. It's just putting things in your golf bag and your rucksack, whatever you want to call it, that you may need later. I mean, it's not a utilitarian view. You honestly want to help those people, get to know those people. But if you're willing to honestly have conversation and learn from those folks, down the road, you pick the phone up and go, hey, I'm stuck here. Or what would you do here? Or what have you seen happen there? But you know, that gets back certainly to your law of intentionality. You have to intentionally not only be willing to grow, but intentionally find the people who can help you grow or the resources. So occasionally it's not people. Certainly I've told you Accidental CEO, certainly Jim Collins early on.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of books were reference books for me. And sort of, You know, Accidental CEO was the CEO of Yum Brands, probably in the 90s. Wrote a book on
the rubber chicken guy, right?
Rubber chicken guy, for sure. And the rubber chicken story is actually where I was going with the comment is Yum Brands is international, so many countries that they're in, and that includes, you know, KFCs and several other Pizza Hut and several other brands. But he found, even in other countries with dramatically different cultures, that people wanted to be honored, and they wanted random recognition, and they wanted recognition that was personal to them and their life. And so he kind of pulled those red threads that I know you try to pull out of, you know, all the business books. Mm-hmm. I try to pull out of kind of the psychology leadership and culture side. And so really, again, it's intentionally surveying what's around you, trying to grow, but then also taking nuggets, which we like to call them. What's the nugget out of this interaction? And store those up because you'll need them later.
Well, going back into the self-awareness, this is something we've talked about in previous podcasts in the state of the captain. Mm-hmm. The very first characteristic of a captain is to be humble. Because I would think that if you're a young entrepreneur or even a middle-aged entrepreneur, right, you're in charge of this entity now, and you believe that there's this persona that you have to be. You've got to be the all-knowing individual to provide guidance to those employees under your charge. So I can see for those individuals who have that pride, who are not humble enough to know and to have the self-awareness that there are things they don't know and aren't willing to be uncomfortable and to ask that quote unquote stupid question, right? Wait a minute, you're leading a business and you know how to read a P&L? Mm-hmm. Those sort of silly questions. I think that causes problems because it is the self-awareness. It is the humility that a leader needs in order to continue to grow. Without those two pieces, awareness and humility, I think it's a recipe for disaster. Have you seen leaders who, you know, put in those blockers and felt that they always have had the right answer?
Sure, and our friend Jim Van Erden, that's helping us, you know, his partner here at the Helmwise, is, you know, we are trying to get to where you don't feel like you need to be the quick answer person. Mm. You need to be the quick question-asking person. Mm. So you're trying to get the right question, the right time, the right depth, but you know, your default needs to be towards questioning as opposed to giving an answer. I do think that it will be interesting to see with the speed at which the environment of business and economy and change is going on now. I feel like, and it's kind of a long answer, that those kind of dogmatic, we're going to do it this way folks, I feel like the target stayed consistent longer in the past. So what I mean is say you are successful, you found a good way to do business, and no one else is going to tell you different.
Yes, yes.
Well, you had a longer runway. You had a decade. Yeah. You had a good while where you could, you know, internet was launched. Well, internet and on-site computing, between that amount of time and cloud computing, you know, that's 8 or 9 or 10 years. So if you're kind of dogmatic, your direction stayed the same. But now we're changing so fast from, you know, the COVID things we've talked about here, but certainly, you know, cloud computing then went to, now AI is coming down the pipe. So I think as the business cycles go faster, I do think it's going to be much more difficult to just hold I know all the answers, this is the way we're going to do it. You know, that's just not going to fly for as long as it used to. I think the speed of change is going faster than you're going to be able to hold on to that course. So if you use our metaphor of, you know, being at sea, the waters aren't going to stay calm enough to just set the one direction. Yeah. It's going to continue to push you left and right. And if you're not willing to ask questions and build out, which is an area of your expertise, the metrics and the things around telling you, so reckoning, what we call it, an or, of, hey, conditions have changed, wind direction has changed, you know, market has changed, employee culture has changed, society has changed. You know, we have a great election coming up, which is going to be a circus. And so, you know, how is that going to impact? Rarely does it actually impact, as the studies show, on who wins the election as far as the economy and those things. But, you know, the economy is still largely out of psychology. And so, you know, consumer habits, spending habits, confidence, all play a part. So as we continue to oscillate, it's become more and more aware who is wise, who is actually having this law of growth mindset.
Right. Right.
And who is kind of dogmatic and picks a direction and just head down, keeps going. I find it, I would wager pretty heavily that's going to be a tough position to hold. But what do you think? I mean, you've got a few more years on me.
Just a few.
A couple more decades. So you've seen you saw what I read about, right. I guess, when I was coming up. So I started working and leading people at a ridiculously young age, I guess, but not in a big environment. You were in huge corporations.
Correct.
During the heyday Correct. Of the 90s. And
yeah, you're right. And some of the things you mentioned, the business landscape has changed over the, you know, 4 decades that I've been in business. And when I first entered into business, it was very much a management by objectives. At the time, project management was very what they call waterfall driven. Mm-hmm. You found your requirements, you made sure those were right, and then you built that particular system, process, machine to those requirements. If the requirements were wrong in the beginning, guess what? You got the wrong product at the end. And going through the decades after that, we started moving towards agile thinking and doing things more in an iterative way. And what I found over the years is that there's been a casualty that has occurred because of this shift towards being more agile, being able to pivot on a moment's notice, being able to adapt to a rapidly changing business environment, and that is, you know, discipline. And so one of the laws that John talks about in the 15 Laws of Growth is this law of consistency. Mm-hmm. It basically says that motivation will get you started, but the discipline is going to keep you growing. And you mentioned about the runway being so short. Things are constantly changing. And I've seen that. It's almost the shiny object syndrome, right? No one spends enough time doing any one thing to get consistent at doing it. And so whether you're using a dashboard or scoreboard or scorecard or metric, or whatever, you're not even measuring enough instances to get any sort of predictive information to determine whether you are on the right path. Next thing you know, you're on a different path. And so you tend to go in circles or in this crazy zigzag pattern instead of going from point A to point B. And so I think the environment we're in is actually making us more chaotic rather than more disciplined. So what have you seen in that environment?
Well, actually, speaking of trying to have growth, and I can't recall what I was reading or looking at, but I was thinking through, we talked about white caps in yes. some of these episodes mm-hmm. of the business goes to this phase, there's always kind of valley of death,
there's
a dip.
There's a pattern, right?
Right, yes. And that dip comes down and up, and there's a painting, I don't know if you can see behind us here, of the waves. And so what I've been thinking about is that you are right, the waves and the change look much more like that scene that is mm-hmm. a little rougher behind us. So in my mind, where I kind of draw, because you are certainly 100% on point that oscillating your targets everywhere is a terrible mistake, because you don't run long enough to
yes.
see the results,
yes.
truly get a test of the hypothesis of whether this is good mm-hmm. or not. But if you hold with me on the waves, so if the waves are going like this, I think the problem is we are setting our goals low enough where the waves are coming over them.
Oh.
And so in my mind, which is obviously a visual mind, I think that you've got to get more macro level. The micro is changing so fast that we are forgetting why we are doing something, what we're trying to accomplish.
So you got to expand. You got to expand your.
We've got to go above the height of the waves.
Okay.
And so if you're, you know, 3 or 4 key performance indicators, whatever you want to call them, are so finite or so detailed into the activity we're doing mm-hmm. now to this client mm-hmm. or towards this short-term waypoint, mm-hmm. that short-term may change quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Your BHAG, your long-term should not. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we, in the past, I think there was a luxury to be able to get finite and down into the details. I think that in the future, as the leader, so certainly, again, I would say middle management and up, you need that detail at the lower levels, because they're the one giving you rudder feedback if we're going to continue to
right.
use the, you know,
right.
the metaphor. But
yeah.
So if you can mentally think about, is the set of KRAs, KPIs, whatever you want to call them, are they subject to the oscillation in business,
yes.
to the waves, or are they high enough up to where they can absorb the change that may be yearly, it may be high inflation, increase in interest rates, you know, crazy COVID or remote work or mm-hmm. campaign or the great resignation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if your day-to-day metrics are low enough down as the leader that you're down in there and every time that changes, to your point, it's throwing you in a completely different, I think you've made a mistake. And so I know that, again, is kind of a visual representation, but reading lately, I think that that's where I see the error of today, at least in the next 3 years, 5 years, and the previous 4 years, If you're going to be that finite, you're going to be in big trouble because you will spin and get lost is the way I view it. So what are your thoughts on that theory? Because you're the master of KPI and running operations.
Almost to a fault. But what you said rang so true in the change from the environment I started in back in the mid-90s, actually mid-80s, into today, is that there has been a shift. There was at a time that, as I mentioned, requirements up front, that you would get very, very detailed into how to deliver that particular piece of strategy. But it was so detailed to the point that you couldn't adapt because it was just too intricate. And now, even when I think of what's happened with the Entrepreneur Operating System, EOS Traction by Gino Wickman, in the VTO with the 10 or 5-year plan, 3-year plan, 1-year plan, and then your 90-day rocks, right? So you've got this constant, 90 days is probably the most detailed you want to get because of the change that you're talking about. But you always got to keep, zooming back out to say, how does that affect our 1-year plan? Have the strategic indicators changed? Has the economy changed? Has the market changed? Are there new technologies that must be considered that we didn't know about when we put this initial 10 or 5-year plan together? So how has that changed? So this zooming in at the 90-day and then zooming back out to the 1, 3, 5, or perhaps 10-year plan, I think has to happen. And perhaps that is the discipline that must be repeated consistently, zoom in and back, zoom out.
Well, your friend Maxwell has it as the next law. So law six, law of the environment.
Yes.
And so if the environment is constantly causing you to change course as opposed to just correct kind of how you achieve getting to the next plot on your course, then I think you're too micro. You've gotten too low down in there. And so that's maybe a good way. So if you're running your, even on a 90-day is running it, we've seen during the 2012 to 2015 kind of slowdown, especially in retail. I know the Great Recession was, 08, 09, 010. We saw retailers that are multi-billion, $40, $50 billion companies budgeting per quarter, which was, necessary when it gets a little rough. But once you get that low, then exactly what we're talking about happens. It was on, it was off, teams are running left, then teams are running right. And by the time they actually developed a plan to deploy, another quarter had hit and another budget came out. And so they didn't realize how much they had, weren't really doing trial and error. They were all reactionary. So it was not responsive to your point, your usual comment. It was reactive. And I think that caused a lot of problems. But law of the environment is certainly there. I think law of the latter is one that, you came from a very structured world, and I don't see the world that structured anymore. So a new employee coming out, the idea of just moving up the ladder, they don't believe in that, as you know,
from
having studied generations. But in reality, there's not many businesses, even if they did want to do a structured growth, that are actually set up that way. And so law of the ladder, so character growth determines the height of your personal growth is certainly accurate for internal, but how does that also work out external in the real world of trying to grow your career and your position?
Well, I think that the character growth piece of it, right, the maturity piece of it is something that is going to impact you both in the workplace and in society as a whole, right? If we tend to see that the world is, it needs to adapt to us, it's all about me, then there's going to be problems both internally or externally. So the character growth, the fact that going back to our core four in State of the Captain, humility, sacrifice, stewardship, and legacy, that's still important, even in your personal growth area, right? Because you've got to understand that I'm here to assist others, got to value others, and through that, we're both going to succeed. But we tend to be in a mindset that I come first. What can the company do for me? What can the government do for me, right? It's all me focused. And we went through that in different generations, the me generation. Some people would say the baby boomers are me generation people. But in reality, the character piece is very important. You've got to fix yourself before you can expect to be part of a high-performing team or before you can believe that you can influence others in a very positive way. You know, John Maxwell say that leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less, right? You can't influence unless you're a good person of character. And that goes back to, you know, what do you believe in? Who do you want to be, right? What are your spiritual values? What are your personal values? All of that comes in. You bring all of that to the workplace. If people think that they're going to put on a persona or a mask when they come to the workplace and they can be someone completely different when they leave the workplace, it's a fallacy. Because as much as you may want to try, I'm sorry, your natural authentic self is going to show up in both places. And so that character growth, I do believe, is an indicator how you can grow personally and professionally. So if you're suffering there, if you haven't fixed yourself first, going back to self-awareness, thinking that you're going to grow up the ladder is going to be very, very difficult, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the subtle switch, people confuse the me of being selfish, which certainly that's one way it goes, is, you know, me in the sense of a 2-year-old or a 6-year-old
sure.
that has grown up to be an adult, which we certainly all, including myself, get into that habit of I want what I want and I want it now.
Yeah.
And that happens. I do think the subtle change when you're talking about truly appreciating and enjoying personal growth is the switch that has happened a little bit more recently, I would argue is fairly unique in the U.S. journey, is a lot of people are getting their self-worth out of how people respond to me.
Correct.
As opposed to setting up their personal goals, not just business. So we're certainly outside of, everything's not about the job, even though this is a business discussion, but instead of what you're contributing towards your purpose. So if that is, you know, rescued animals, if it's your family, if it is your career, if it's your, you know, your calling because you have a belief in a religion or a higher power, you're going to solve whatever it may be, you know, your worth largely to me, certainly there's the ethics side of worth, but as far as your contribution is, are you making forward progress towards a goal that you have set forward? If your worth is determined how everyone else responds to you, you know, you're very optimistic that the world is going to actually take the time to respect, and you have very little control. So this is where I think personal growth, professional growth, is an area where you can get self-worth because you're making incremental small steps towards something that you find valuable, as opposed to waiting on recognition from the world.
Yes.
And so, you know, that answers sort of a little bit of your latter discussion and a little bit of the next one, law of curiosity, of asking why.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why is not, why not me?
Correct.
Why not me is hoping someone sees it. We've had people in our organization, great leaders, that say, we have that great SOW, that scope of work, as we call it, or SLA. So, you know, we've laid it out, we've executed, we've hit every metric, we've delivered on time, yeah, under budget.
Right, right.
They should appreciate me. And I calmly tell them, that would be a wonderful world that you have done all the things you were asked to do, and they just naturally go gold star, like in school, and they're happy to have you.
Right.
The reality is, unless they feel like you're making them a hero and you're having a contribution and their perception matches, so if they don't realize you're contributing and you're not self-aware enough to ask, why am I doing this? Why do they want us to handle it? How are they perceiving it? So if you're not really working towards your, not just executing, but towards executing with excellence and communicating that out to build rapport and relationship, this happens even in your personal growth, your job, you want to move up in your career. Head down, getting your work done is expected. But if you're not building relationships and you're not finding mentors and you're not expanding and asking why and you're not curious and helping contribute to the team, your fellow employees, your leadership, you know, I know everyone has bad bosses that try to take, which we'll cover a little bit further down, you know, but you have to have a mindset of what am I contributing towards, what's important. And it can be what's important to me. So that's why I said there's a distinguishing there. Even with a selfish attitude, if you don't convert that to how do I contribute towards the community, towards the team, towards the career, you're really going to have a self-fulfilling prophecy, in my opinion. I don't see how it works out otherwise.
Yeah, a lot there. And that why question. And as you were speaking about it, it started bringing back some Stephen Covey stuff. And in my mind, because you're right. We think we're curious, and we ask the question why, but our frame of reference is the why so that I can understand, mm-hmm. right? Which it needs to be the other way. You got to ask the question why to understand why the other person is perhaps acting the way they are or not seeing the value that you mentioned because we hit all the appropriate SLA information. And so curiosity to me goes beyond self. It goes back to self-awareness, right? You've got to be naturally curious about why things are happening that you don't understand, right? If a person comes in and they're motivated by something that just doesn't make sense to you, the actual curiosity should say, let me understand why that person's motivated that. Instead of saying, why isn't that person acting like me? You know, Abraham Lincoln had a great saying. He said, you know, I don't like that man. I must get to know him better. It was this natural curiosity to say, wait a minute, just because I'm frustrated doesn't mean I shouldn't seek out to try to learn, to try to grow. And I think a lot of times we're always asking the why question, not always, but many times we're asking the why question on how it impacts me instead of asking the why question to understand them.
Yeah, we built connection. A connection. You know, as you know, you helped build out a framework here called PDE.
Right.
That we have taken to purpose-driven execution, purpose being the most important part. And so you may be delivering, again, we'll take it back to the business, you may be delivering on the scope of work that corporate has set as the scope, but the individual you're actually working with at the level you're on,
right,
that may not be the most important thing to them.
That's 100%
correct. And so if you're not getting what's important at each level lined out and delivering, and so to your point, it may be a conflict there, and you don't understand why you're not getting along, but until you ask Scott, what is most important to you?
There you go.
And it may not be a linear execution of some project plan. It may be, hey, my boss looks for A, B, and C. He likes the desk clean, people here at 7, really has nothing to do. Well, you still have to achieve your goal, but it is narrow-minded, and again, that sort of head down, not being willing to try other things and be able to expand. All right, well, let's get those three things that probably are irrelevant to the goal, but let's make sure they're checked off mm-hmm. first, and let's satisfy what the other person needs while still achieving our goal. And I think that's an important distinction. I see a lot of hard left brain people, you know, they have this problem. Obviously, the hard right brain people have the problem of they spend so much time talking about what do you want to achieve? They don't actually get a plan, which then sets you off in a different direction,
yes,
Scott.
Yes,
so
yes.
This is why we talk about that inverted U and kind of trying to stay and oscillate left and right, but stay in the golden mean, as Aristotle would call it. But yeah, if you don't know what their actual objectives and what they find valuable and what makes them feel better, you can deliver a product or a service and not deliver a relationship at all. And that's a big mistake in business and big mistake in your career as you try to move up.
Yeah, what you mentioned about that individual wants everything here on time, et cetera, it goes back to that why question, right? You may not believe that those things are contributing to the goal, but maybe there are things that you don't know. So be curious, ask the question why in a respectful way. Say, hey, I'm not seeing how, you know, being here on time or dressing a certain way is getting us towards our goal. Could you help me understand? And you may learn something. Or that simple conversation may then cause the person who had these very strict rules in place to say, yeah, you're right. That isn't adding to the goal. So let me make some modifications. But without that natural curiosity and to be curious, not to be right, right? You just want to, you don't want to go there and say, yeah, I want to win, I think is a very important concept. And that brings us sort of to kind of the final one that we'll talk about as far as the 15 invaluable laws of growth are concerned, which is the law of modeling, which basically says, you know, how do you grow if you're the only person you're looking at? So it's now the strength of who are your models and where do you find the people who are going to continue to challenge you, to make you feel uncomfortable, to cause you to grow. I think the official law says a law of modeling, it's hard to improve when you have no one but yourself to follow. And you mentioned in the beginning when you talked about talking to people and listening to podcasts, and in that in 15 Laws of Growth, what they'll talk about is some of the people's very first mentors are actually books. They're learning through what people have written. They're learning through history. And I know you're a big history buff as well as, you know, from a psychology perspective. But how do you find good models, right? Especially in an area that may be new or unique. AI, for example. No one's ever done AI. Who are the models in AI now? I don't know.
I think that I would caution. So there's good advice there and there's bad advice there. Okay. And the reason I say I would caution people is I see this happening a lot, and we see it a ton in the social media and the TikTok type world now, is stand on the shoulder of giants is obviously an old phrase, but it is accurate. So find the giants. If you don't have someone around you, the giants, but be very clear what area and what contribution makes them a giant. And so what I mean by that is we see today a lot of people who are great actors, who are great academics, who are great book writers, who are great speakers, who are great athletes. And for the areas they have shown success, hard work, ethic, talents, areas they're giants, model them.
Yeah.
Once they leave their expertise, we have now taken the opinion that, if they're a great orator, they must know lots of stuff. Well,
right.
This is where you kind of should do history, because history tells you that, they had a forked tongue, snake oil salesman. People who spoke very smooth were actually considered a high risk. They weren't considered a positive. It was actually a watch out, because they're so eloquent and they're so smooth in how they speak to you. They're going to talk you into doing things you don't want to do. So we take a lot of, we may take an athlete who's done great things, been super successful, and we start asking them about things that are outside of their wheelhouse. And so lay out what you would like to learn. Find the giants in the areas that they are in. Do not make the mistake of, spreading out the fact that they have been hugely successful in the areas they're not that brilliant.
They're the perfect example of everything. Embodiment.
I was reading a C.S. Lewis who was talking about Freud. And when it came to psychology, his comment was, Freud is brilliant when it comes to his bringing in philosophy. He's an amateur. And I think his comment was that, philosophy, I'm an expert. He has some great contributions past all the crazy stuff the listener's probably thinking of when you hear Freud. He actually does have some very valid, good theories. We love to hone in on the being in love with your mom and that type stuff. But they have some great theories there. But once it got beyond his real area of being a giant, you've got to be careful there, because we don't have others. So this is when you have no one else to follow. Be very particular on how much you follow that person outside of their bailiwick or whatever their area is. So that would be my warning. But books start there. We have a great opportunity. This generation, more than any generation by far on the history of the planet, has an opportunity to get, they have people reading as if they're C.S. Lewis, as if they're, Frankel, whatever you want. Any person in the past, you can now go and read it, see videos of it.
That's true.
Hear it.
The information is
very... And so you can get it, but you have to be careful to slot it where it needs to be, just like you would in personal business development. So to me, having five people who are experts in whatever area of business, branding, telling you how to set up project management, you've left their realm. Mm-hmm. And so the same happens in personal development to me. I see it's let people leave their realm a little bit, and we need to probably move to another giant in that area to follow. And then lastly, I'll let you jump in. I've expanded this one too long. It is still pull those red threads that you talk about. Yeah. So what is common among the individuals that you are following, and what is their unique twist? Usually the common pattern or principle is where you want to stay. The individual advice, again, is maybe only applicable to the audience they had or the time frame they were in, but the actual principle you take away transcends time, kind of gets above that wave height we're talking about. So,
well, I think what you just outlined in going through that law of modeling reinforces some of the things we talked about, right? So when you're looking for that model, looking for that mentor, be intentional about why you're looking for that individual. You're looking for a very specific skill or an area which they're got experience in or knowledge in or wisdom in or those things, but not seeing them as all-knowing, all-being for everything, right? And with that, the awareness, the curiosity, right? When you start hearing something or they're modeling a behavior that seems a bit weird to you, be curious. Understand that. Because again, they may be doing something that isn't congruent with where you want to go. It might help them get to where they want to go, but going back to your own self-awareness, you're setting your goal. And you mentioned goals earlier, which I thought was great because we talk a lot about goals in business, goals and objectives. Well, goals and objectives are growth. When you set that goal or objective, you're moving the company from point A to point B. It is growing in some way or fashion. So the fact that we talk a lot about personal growth actually applies to businesses growing as an entity as well. And so all the things that we talked about, intentionality, awareness, consistency, you know, the environment, the curiosity, those are the same things you must have as tenants inside your business ethos, culture, mindset, as you do for yourself. One of the things that we talked about just a day or two ago with our team was this concept of seasonality. And this growth brings it right into that. So it's a bit of adjacent, which is we all are going through different seasons. Personally, going through different seasons. Your knowledge in your company is going through different seasons. Business in general, the cycle of business from startup to decline is going through different seasons. And so when you think about personal growth, does it change by season or is it a constant, the red thread, regardless of seasonality?
I think thoughts? Growth mindset needs to stay constant.
Okay.
So always looking to grow. Take those goals. If the goals aren't achievable, break them into smaller incremental steps so that you can get momentum. Where seasonality comes in is what area you're growing in. And so the reality is, you know, if you think of relationships, you think of a family, you think about your career, you know, you think about the actual business itself, how you're leading your teams. There's lots of different areas of growth, how much you're learning about culture and leadership skills. You know, you must be willing to pivot those things. So we talk about harmony as opposed to balance. Everybody wants balance. That's not really accurate and rarely occurs. But, you know, while you're young, you're going to school, potentially a trade school, and you're starting your career, it's about your personal, literally your personal career growth and leadership growth, and that's your main focus. If you go and have a young family and have young kids, well, now you have a conflict and you need to start thinking about which one is more important for a little while. Maybe one needs to set aside, not forget it, but it needs to set aside because new priorities come up. And so I do see a lot of people that get same as the business, dogmatic, I picked a direction and a, you know, scope of work and we're going to do this and here's the goals. Well, life doesn't work linear of all things, more so than business because you bring in even more variables. Yeah. And so I do think seasonality to stay a, this is where the we discussion comes in. So you can selfishly say me, 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 me. And what you'll do is you will not shift to what priority actually needs to be developed at that time because you are not asking why, you're not doing the laws of growth.
Right.
You're also losing the things that probably are most valuable to you and you don't realize it because you become so dogmatic and I'm going to push this. This is it. This one item is it. Until it's done, that's it. Well, you know, heaven forbid you have a child that's got a disability to the NICU. You know what? Your career goal and your leadership at the company needs to be, you need to be honest enough. And if your company has any good values or ethics, hey, you know what? I need some time. I've got this other priority. I'll do all I can. Here's what I'll do to make sure those obligations are met. But those obligations probably at that point go to the minimum viable execution of those obligations. And you need to set that aside. You need to focus on children, or heaven forbid you have a child die. Most people get divorced after that, high percentage, because they've got to shift. It's a horrible thing, but you've got to shift to what you want your relationship, your marriage to be like. And if you can't shift that and you're still stuck on the horrible thing that happened that's inexplicable and terrible, the odds of making it through are pretty low. But if you haven't done that prior to the emergency, no different, you can speak heavily to this. Certainly the training you did to elite pilots, if you haven't practiced shifting to what the top priority is, not abandoning, but I'm going to move to this growth area, this growth area, we're going to harmonize where it needs to be, and we're going to shoehorn because there are larger goals we have to get there. You got to force some of them, but being non-adaptive, being unaware of your environment was certainly one of the laws above. Not self-reflecting, not pouring into others, and always looking at yourself is a recipe to potentially make it to your goal. But you know, it's cliche. I wouldn't even say it's cliche. It's 100% accurate. Let's look at the titans of Wall Street and the titans of the music industry and the acting industry and even a lot of sports. They made it. Now let's look at the wreckage behind them.
Exactly right.
And let's look at the happiness of their life.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that they could have still made it. Like, I'm not saying that they don't continue to pursue their goal, but I don't know that they took the time to recognize these other areas. So it is harmony. And I think people, when they think it's balance, make a mistake, because then they go, well, that's going to throw me completely off. And I'm like, no. You need to just kind of harmonize, bring it back into course of where you're still. You don't abandon where you're going. So that's a long-winded answer of seasonality is certainly, you have to be aware of it. You have to pivot to it. Otherwise, you may reach your destination and be alone. And we start, one of our HelmWise cohorts starts with a captain alone on a ship.
Yes. You know,
trying to go against the tempest and the big obstacle, and we have an open discussion. Is that a good captain or a bad captain? And that depends on what the tempest is, the tempest and ego. So anyway, I'll let you speak on that one.
Well, I think you brought up a lot of things that we've already talked about. So first of all, we've got to recognize that there are seasons. That's awareness, right? Mm-hmm. That we are in a season of our life, and that's going to change based on all those circumstances that you mentioned. We're in a season with the company that we're currently with, our knowledge of that company, our knowledge of the culture, of fitting in, the adapting to the team dynamics, et cetera. And then there's the business itself and where the business is in its cycle of startup, growth, maturity, and decline. And all of those are constantly shifting. It's a kaleidoscope looking through a little kid's toy. Just a little tweak changes the picture. Those things are constantly interacting with one another. And so there's the individual awareness that that's happening and knowing that, look, for right now, I need to deprioritize perhaps some of my day-to-day responsibilities at work because I do have a sick parent, or my kid, you know, woke up ill and needs to be taken to the doctor, or the case may be. And knowing that's a shift. Maybe for today, maybe for this week, maybe longer term, depending on what the factors are. And so the individual has to be aware that those dials are shifting and there's going to be some adjustments. But those around them also have to be curious enough to say, hey, what's going on in that person's seasonality, their personal season, their company season, their business season? Because that goes back to being curious, asking why, right? Oh, wait a minute. Now I understand why they're not as attentive as they were in the past, or they're not as available as they were in the past. It's because their season has changed, which means we need to adapt our season, right? We can't perhaps depend on that person as much for this particular season, and therefore we've got to adapt. And so it's this constant kaleidoscope of changes, seasonality at the business, seasonality at the individual, and it's constantly changing. And so often we tend to see things as being very finite, when in reality, they're very dynamic and things are constantly changing. So seasonality for me, that was a great topic that we covered with our team a couple of days ago, because it does affect us all. And we can stick our head in the sand, or we can, again, grow both as an individual and as an organization by acknowledging that these things are shifting and adapting to them.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, ultimately, though, we're in business. It's a business discussion. You know, the ship, the business must remain on course and reach its destination.
Correct.
There's other people on board, other people depending on
you. There you go.
So you also have to have the maturity to understand sometimes you need to step out. It's just not for you. And you, if you're the actual leader, you need to get other leaders to fill that role. If you're an employee, it may be time to work somewhere else. I can't do the things that are necessary for the, you know, tens, hundreds, other employees, thousands. Occasionally we have here, you know, you've got to be willing to move and pivot. And that's, again, selfless. And you don't know where that'll lead. That doesn't mean 5 years. You talk about setting up mentors down the road. When you go to another job or down the road and someone says, you know what, that was really a selfless act to just say, you know what, I'm not the person. Let's find you someone who can dedicate. I've got these other priorities. I must focus my. It doesn't mean that's not going to return to you tenfold in the future.
Sure.
That's a short-sighted view, but there are times where the organization cannot absorb what your priorities are right now in its business.
I agree with that 100%.
So that's the strengths and weaknesses. So we're sticking with you. You covered a little bit with me, so I'll just bring the question back to you. What do you focus on, your strengths or your weaknesses?
Yeah, most of my career, I tried to focus on my weaknesses. I've read a lot that says, no, it's the wrong way of doing it. You know, Marcus Buckingham in his book, First Break All the Rules, talked about, look, you should focus on the things that you're good at, not the things that you're not good at. Which then brings in, and the reason I did that is, I grew up in an environment where as a Marine Corps officer, you're a jack of all trades. You know everything there is to know about the Marine Corps. You start your first 6 months as a commissioned second lieutenant at the basic school, TBS, learning all the things there are. So as a Navy, you're expected to know infantry tactics. You're expected to know artillery. You're expected to know engineering. You're expected to even know legal things from a UCMJ perspective, Uniform Code of Military Justice. And so I grew up in this environment that you had to be kind of good at all things. And so when I transitioned out of the military into my civilian career, I was exposed to a lot of areas that I had no knowledge in. And so my natural tendency was, I got to know, at least be conversant or knowledgeable in that. And so I started acquiring a bunch of different certifications. So over the many decades thereafter, I became, sort of a massive generalist. And then that started to go flying in the face of what I was reading, saying about this need to focus on your strength, the need to be a specialist. They talk about the analogy of a doctor, right? You want to go to, you got a brain tumor, you're going to go to, a brain surgeon, you're going to go to just your general practitioner, right? You want a specialist because you want the very, very best to do that very detailed thing. And so I've always struggled with this generalist versus specialist mentality. I came across a book called Range by a gentleman called David Epstein, which he used athletes, and he was talking like Tiger Woods, who picked up a golf club when he was like 1 year old, and suddenly that was his career. He came very, very good, versus someone like Rafael Nadal, who didn't start playing tennis until late in his teens. But he was a phenomenal athlete because he had played other sports. And we talk about multi-sport athletes, the Bo Jacksons of the world versus the Michael Jordans and those sort of things. And so for me, I've always had a generalist approach. I understand the need for specialists, and I would prefer to have people who are deep in certain areas and in places where I'm not strong, but I also value those who understand the interfaces, the importance of the other pieces. So I tend to be more on the generalist versus the specialist side. You were a lawyer, so maybe it was specialist from the beginning.
No, generalist for sure.
Okay.
I think the world is... Again, this is an area where we've got to get back to true wisdom, because I do think that the ability to dive deep is actually your ability to learn, which is a long answer, again, kind of a lawyer answer for sure. But if you learn how to dive deep quickly and get enough information to deploy a specialist, that is its own skill set.
Yes.
And so that skill set, I think in the future... Certainly, there is a tidal shift, tides being back to the ocean, but of the idea of specialists now having specialty knowledge or acquired knowledge no one else has, those days are over. And I work with some boards and different colleges, they're just over. There's no unique knowledge that you're going to bring to the table as a hire. Now, you will bring unique ways to deploy that knowledge. You'll bring unique ways to create with that knowledge, unique ways to turn a profit with that. So it's a little bit of nuance, but again, the shifting tides of you're a specialist, you assume that being a baseline coder, which 5 years ago was an amazing job and career, is going to be it forever, because I can code in whatever the newest language version of code, if it's Ruby, well, Ruby's not new, but pick your language, if that's C#, whatever it is. Well, you have 3 years left. I mean, I'd hate to be blunt now, but the people who architect what to do with that code and the people who know where and when to deploy it and how to manipulate it, so the AI may deliver basic code function, make this button red, make this charts that look like this, move this table here. We won't need those coders anymore. What we'll need is the people who are probably a little more general that say, well, actually we need three buttons and I need the buttons in this order and this color makes the most sense. And so again, you've got the level of detail is going to be a rare industry that, you know, you're still going to have it in the engineers, the sciences, and the math potentially, but the generalist, certainly the people who are in more clerk type positions, and then a lot of white collar jobs, I would say, unlike most revolutions of the past, are really at risk in the next 3 to 5 years. So the answer is get specific at a level that allows you some flexibility, because if you don't do that, but certainly go to what your strength is. I do think that is accurate, and I think you mitigate your weakness. And you've got to determine, I mean, this is back to humility. Why are you trying to actually learn a weakness? If that's because correct. It may be detrimental, then yes, you should go all in.
Correct.
If it's because you are not self-confident enough or not enough humility or not enough trust, mm-hmm. which is a lot of it, do you trust other people to handle the areas?
Yes.
But the reality is most people, I mean, you've heard me say this a lot of times, is more the spider web kind of diagram. Most people have seen put the plot and you put the lines around it, looks like a spider web. If you go really high in an attribute, whether that's a math, yeah. a science, another one pulls up.
Exactly right.
And so you actually, a super strength usually equals a super weakness or yeah. multiple areas where you're maybe not that good. It might not be a complete catastrophe. So the idea you're going to be great everywhere, not so accurate. I think the shift towards the generalist is coming back, because I think that the access to data deployment, AI learning is going to be so robust in the next 5 years to 10 years that the ones who can figure out how to deploy it and when I need it are going to be the ones who survive. And it's similar to database guys. You know, that was huge. That was great. You built a great database. You've done amazing. Move the data lakes, all the things that we have now, you know, even AI is going to disrupt that because structures, the way the computer interacts. So that's getting a little nerdy, but those folks at least understand architecture. And so when they can see architecture and know where to deploy specialty, they're probably going to be in good shape. If you're just down in there doing specialty, it's going to get hard, I would say, very quickly, 3 to 5 years max.
Yeah, I agree. There was a book I read back in the early 90s called The Fifth Discipline by a gentleman called Peter Senge. And what he talked in there is something called systems thinking. And what he meant in that book was the fact that it's really the interfaces between things that are most important. And so when I think about this generalist versus specialist debate, I think about you've got to know enough to understand how it's going to affect something else. If you know nothing about the other thing, you have no appreciation for how it works within the system, how it works within the company, or whether or not the decision you're making or the path that you're on is going to place more or less stress on that other piece of the business. So I think my general nature is to learn enough about things to understand how all the pieces work together. And then say, look, if I really need something deep inside of finance, I'm not an accountant, right? I'm going to go find someone who knows that. But I understand the importance of accounting, the importance of finance in a business, and that's where the generalist piece comes in. But really to do it well, you need specialists. And so to me, that's where the team comes together. Those individuals who are good in operations, good in strategy, good in finance, good in HR, but you understand the importance of how the team needs to work together. So with that, we're going to shift to the final thing we talked about. We have this unique situation where I actually got a question from one of our listeners, and I thought it was something we should talk here about on the Powerhouse Perspective, because it's not unique. I think you and I may have different perspectives based on what we've done in our careers. But the question is, what do you do if your boss is a weak leader? In other words, how do you lead from the middle of the organization? And so that's interesting. That's a very challenging thing. I'll start by saying I made a lot of decisions early in my career, especially in the Marine Corps. One of the reasons I left the Marine Corps was my lack of confidence in senior leadership. But I also realized that, you know, I was in my 30s back then, and I wasn't as mature as I am now, didn't have as much wisdom as I have now. But I became frustrated that I was being led, I'll put that in quotes, by people who I thought weren't good leaders. Now, one has to say, what am I judging against? What standard, et cetera? We can get into more detail there. So for me, you know, my response to it was to leave, right? Leading, getting led by a bad leader. Obviously, I can't just move to a different, you know, service. So I left the Marine Corps. That was my approach. And so that certainly that is an approach one could take if you think that you're not being led by a good leader. You could leave and go seek employment or go on a different team other than that. But I do think you need to do the best you can with where you are before you make that decision. So that's where the wisdom of years has come in, right? What have I done to help that leader recognize, perhaps, that they need to work in a particular area? They may not be aware that they're not a good leader. They may have been tossed into that situation because of some circumstance in the business. They may be unprepared, and they're going through the very things that we talked about. There's pride in there. They think they're the boss. They got to have all the answers. So they don't know what they don't know. So what can you do in order to help them come to that realization? But not from, hey, you're not a good leader. You do it different ways. You ask questions. You treat them with respect. You try to make them successful, first of all. And hopefully that establishes trust in a dialogue where you can have a more fruitful conversation about leadership. Now, I've always worked for someone. So there's always been a commanding officer for me. So I've always been second in command or beneath. You've been the head of an organization from the beginning. So how would you answer this particular question? What if you felt that there was someone who felt that your leadership style wasn't resonating with them?
Well, I'll speak without experience. So I'll start with that. I do think there's a higher question, though, when you see the leader that's above you, and it's you hinted at it, obviously, is that an opportunity or a risk? Mm. And so I think you need to baseline ask yourself, in the military, a weak leader is certainly a risk.
Correct.
And you have to weigh out how real or how immediate, I guess, is that risk, or whether you actually see that as, you know, an opportunity, not in a I'm going to usurp opportunity, because it may be an opportunity is what's the best you can do as a subordinate. And you also need to realize that leaders that are, well, a weak leader is different than a arrogant leader.
Yes.
So, you know, there's different types of bad leaders, I guess you would say. But, you know, most people in their mind immediately go to the jerk boss or the arrogant boss in their head. I find the jerk, arrogant boss a little easier to deal with, oddly enough, than the weak leader who doesn't make a stand. Mainly because usually when your boss is an arrogant jerk, you know, arrogance comes out of fear most of the time. And so to your point, if you truly take the time, and you got to understand what you're dealing with, there's a difference in one that's afraid and one's a sociopath who's going to manipulate and suck all the glory out of you. Those are two different bosses. But if they are just truly leading out of fear, if you can find ways to set them up for success, I think that that's important. I do think that probably if you're in a position where you don't feel like leaving is an opportunity, I would most implore you to clearly and cleverly lay out your plans in writing on all areas that you have some concern. And so what I mean by that is not be overt, but Scott, hey, good yeah. meeting today. Here's what I was, you know, here's what I heard. Here's what I think. Here's the things, you know, I'm hearing from you, and here's what we're going to do. And make sure that's almost a CYA email. One, you need it anyway to clarify the direction you're going. Mm-hmm. Two, if what you thought was a, you know, I guess nervous or scared leader actually is a sociopath and will steal your glory, is just a jerk, you have in writing an answer that, no, we had this discussion, here were right. my suggestions. Also, if they're the leader that throws you under the bus whenever it goes south, first thing I would do is get very clever in how I lay out what we're working towards, what we're going to do to achieve it, who's responsible for what. So I would lean heavily on your op side in a psychologically smart way of, hey, great meeting yeah. today. I hear your advice. I understand these are the priorities, and here's how I'm going to operate based off of this understanding. You lay that out clearly. You, one, have laid a roadmap that can make them look better. Two, you've covered whether they can take credit. Three, you've covered whether or not they can throw you under the bus. And so I do think there's ways to be honestly trying to succeed that covers your tail and make sure you're in a good position. Before that, to your point, there's an opportunity versus risk. So, you know, weak leaders certainly in most business, unless they're going to bankrupt the business or you're going to take the fall with them, which again is why I would say be clever in how you document. Generally, I see it as an opportunity. I mean, weak leaders are, I wouldn't, manipulate's a bad word we've talked about, but certainly they're an opportunity to me. So they're not the opportunity you want. You'd much rather have a mentor leader that is a great leader that is showing you the way, that's setting you up to take the next step. That's ideal. We all want that. I think that if you change your mindset and say, you know what, this leader's not that good, but how can I shine without trying to outshine them? Certainly don't want to do that. You can build them up, to your point, pour into them in a way that is clever enough to make sure you're not getting overtaken or go down with them as they go down. But we all screw up. And so I do think you got to have a self-reflection. I'll close on that, is that you are going from your arrogant perception of what it's like to be in that seat.
Correct.
And so, and it's not even necessarily arrogant, it's ignorant maybe, because you never sat in the seat. So you don't know, you know, it's really easy to armchair quarterback.
You don't know. Lord knows, you don't know. There you go.
We've got a bazillion of those nowadays. But if you're not on the field, at least trying to make it happen, you probably don't know the pressure. And you don't know the weird pressure we talked about earlier in this podcast. Your boss's boss may have some KPIs, some things that are, you know, really important to them that make zero sense even to your direct superior.
Right.
But they're having to respond to those things, and you're going, what an idiot. Why are they, why is Scott spending all this time doing these things that have nothing to do with our role? Well, Scott's boss might think those things are important. So there's a lot of variables you do not see. I think that's important.
Asking why, curiosity. We talked about that. Yeah, there were two sources that I would go to answer this question. The first is another John Maxwell book called The 360 Degree Leader. The second book that I would recommend is actually a Jocko Willink book, and it is called Leadership, Strategy, and Tactics. And in there, he actually talks about this situation where he and his fellow SEALs thought that they were being led by a poor SEAL commander, and they actually almost mutinied on that. And he speaks about how he dealt with it. And a lot of it came back to exactly what you're talking about, which is set your leader up for success first, right? Try to team with that individual in order to find out why they are acting the way that they may not know, right? But if you are seen there as being a good teammate first, then you open up the possibility to connect and have a different dialogue. But if you take an adversarial approach, the person is automatically bad, you're not being curious, you're not seeking to understand, then it causes problems. Now you've got this tension between you instead of the ability to work forward. So I would focus on yourself, make sure you're modeling leadership well yourself, and then continue to support them, continue to open up the dialogue with them, and, you know, for the most part, just be a good team member. And hopefully that's going to establish enough connection for you to have a much deeper conversation to figure out the why on the situation. And they may rightly say, hey, look, you're right. I'm going to lean on you. You're showing some great leadership. You're a great teammate. You've been making me look good. You're supporting me. I'm going to give you more responsibility. And they may even form you to be their successor. So when they move on, whether that's moving out of the organization or moving up in the organization, guess what? You now position yourself as the person to be in that seat. And I guarantee you that once in that seat, you're going to see things differently. So that's how I would approach it.
Yeah, I do think that identifying why you think, and that takes some probing, but why you really think they're a bad leader, and why, being why, is the actual motivation behind their actions. And so I think that is important. If it is, you know, they're kind of a fallen leader who's trying to suck up to the brass above, you should know they're probably going to throw you under the bus, and they're not, you know, or are they not decisive because they're afraid to me, that's actually one of the easier ones. It doesn't make it safe, but it's easier to deal with. If their arrogance is out of some fear or they just don't want to look bad, it's pretty easy for you to take control without them realizing it. But the sociopaths, pretty hard to sneak out, but because they're good at it. But, you know, 3 to 5% are. Certainly that percent increases as you move up in organizations, military or business. And so you got to watch those people because they're who they need to be no matter who they're around. So the chameleons, you really got to watch out for. And so, but some are just inexperienced. Some have other risks. Some have other seasonality going on in their life. There's things you don't know. And so I think taking an honest appraisal gives you a better opinion of your strategy, but it's not an easy position, I imagine. I've done all I can not to be in that position, so that probably tells you how much I want to be in it. I'm willing to do very small business and very menial things not to have someone telling me how to do it. But the reality is we all have bosses. We've talked about it here. The idea that you're your own boss, you'll do it your way, and if you're in charge and you own it, is a fallacy certainly sold by people who do like to sow some discord because the market is always your boss. The customer is your boss. You know, finances, if you borrow, the bank is your boss. Your investor, if you have investors, they're your boss. Board of directors, your boss. There's a lot of bosses, whether you believe it or not, whether you're a solopreneur doing home repair. Trust me, you still have a boss. You think you get to run whatever, but when reputation gets around town, that you're not meeting the needs of the customers, you'll still get fired because you'll be out of business. And so, you know, you can have this imagination that you're going to be the boss and control all items. That's just a dream. And so I would close with that of even when you become the boss, there's a boss.
There's a boss.
That's absolutely a pipe dream. So.
Well, Chandler, great free-flowing discussion. I encourage all of our listeners or those who may perhaps watch us on YouTube, if you do have a question, something you want Chandler and I to discuss here on The Powerhouse Perspective, please put it in the show notes or there's a comment section or you can go at info@helmwise.com and just send us an email and we will talk about it on the next Powerhouse Perspective. But we appreciate it. Great discussion. Everything from growth to seasonality to, you know, how to deal with a potentially weak boss. I appreciate your insights, Chandler. And we'll see you next time on The Powerhouse Perspective. Cheers.